We're beginning on the top of Tadi Amud Aleph. The Gemara is here continuing discussing the two different brayot. We brought down one brayot that says that a woman and a man have, when we're talking about an Eved Knani, that is Nechse Malug. Nechse Malug means that the principal is owned by the woman, but the husband has rights to use the peirot. So in one instance, one brayot says, Tani Chada Avdei Malug Yotzim B'Shein V'Ayin Lisha Avalish. If the woman knocks out a tooth or an ayin of the Eved Knani, that's Nechse Malug, the Eved goes free, but the man does not set him free when he does the same sort of damage. We have an alternative braisa that says nor the man nor the woman has the ability to free the slave in knocking out the tooth or the ayin. So the Gemara is going through iterations of what is the machlokas between the braithot. So the first suggestion of the Gemara, and that's why it was brought down, is here that their machlokas was about takanas usha, whether they held of takanat usha or didn't hold of takanat usha, and whether they held on takanat usha would influence how much control the woman had over here, the ability for her to sell. If she has the ability to sell, she has enough control that when she knocks out the tooth or the ayin, that the eved goes free. On the other hand, if she doesn't have control, meaning like Takanas Usha says that when she sells it, the husband can go back and take it back from the kuchot, so there's really no sale. In that case, the husband can stop the sale from going through, in a sense, and therefore she hits out the chain and ayin, she also can't free the slave. So the Gemara said, no. Maybe. The difference in the bright, though, is that both of them hold of Takanat Usha, but just one of them was before the Takana was established, and one of them was after the Takana was established. And the last suggestion is the Gemara's suggestion, no, that both of them hold of Takanat Usha, but their machlokas is about Rava. That Rava has a position about Hekdesh Chametz V'Shichru, which we discussed at the end of yesterday's daf, that has the ability to take away Shibud, to remove a lien on the property. So by removing the lien, the woman then takes away the husband's rights of refusal or the rights to take back the item after her death. So the question here is whether you hold of Rava or don't hold of Rava. If you hold of Rava, then the woman, by through her freeing of the slave, meaning when she hits out the tooth and the iron, as Tosfos points out, you have to assume that hitting out a tooth and iron is equivalent to freeing the slave. So when you free the slave, that removes the shibud over here, and therefore the woman's able to free the slave through the hitting of the chain and the iron. On the other hand, the other Brisa believes, not like Rava, that Shichur does not take away or eliminate the shibud over here. And so since it doesn't eliminate the shibud, the woman is still subjected to the husband's refusal or his lien on the slave, and therefore even she knocks out the tooth of the ayin, that does not set the slave free. So the Gemara starts in the second line on Tzadi Amud Aleph, Lema Derova Tanahi. If you're suggesting that the machlokes between these braitot over here isn't whether they hold of Rava or not, that means that Rava's statement, which is an Amora statement, is really a machloket Tanahim. So the Gemara says, though, the Kuliyama Itluhu de Rava, everybody holds of the position of Rava. Bahacha Amur Rabban the Shibuda de Baal. Right, that the machlokas is really about the power of the shibud of the baal. We've seen this in other places in the darim and in ketubot, that the rabbanim, when they establish a shibud, when they establish the ability for someone to have a lien on a property, so now we know that they then have some sort of first rights or rights of refusal because of their lien. But we also have this position of Rava, and as Tosfos points out, that it affects other isurim, that there are ways to circumvent the shibud through neder, through hekdesh, through chametz and shechur. So if you can circumvent the lien in some ways, the chamim haven't accomplished anything. So the question of the machloket and the braitot over here is how strong is the lien that the chamim establish? In some places, the chamim establish their lien to be strong, so strong that is the lien, that even chametz, shechur and hekdesh cannot eliminate the shibud of the rabbonon. That's the concept here. The machlokes between the braitot is one braitot says that when the chamim established the takanos usha, that was a lien that is so strong that even with shechur it won't eliminate such a lien. So in that case, neither the isha nor the ish has enough control or ownership in order to free the slave. On the other hand, if it's just a normal lien and shechur freeing the slave will eliminate such a lien, then you'll have a case where if the woman hits the shein and the ayin and the eved goes free because of that, the husband lien is eliminated through that shechur, and therefore the woman could set the eved free by hitting his tooth or ayin out, whereas the husband obviously cannot because the husband only has Kinyan ha peirot. Ve'id bayit emo. Another possibility over here is the kuli amalei luhu lahani tanai. That nobody holds of all these tanayim, all these machlokot that we talked about. How leduhani tanai takanas usha, and they don't hold of takanas usha. So there's no discussion about any other positions. There's a simple machlokas between the two brayot here, which is what hacha bekinyan peirot ki kinyan agufta mi kemiflegei. That they're arguing about simply whether a leasehold, renting, or the ability to take the production of a certain entity, is that considered to be enough of an ownership to be real ownership over the property or not? So, in our case here, what's the setup? The setup is that the woman owns it. It's Nick Samaluk. The woman owns the principal of the item, and the husband is entitled to the output, to the payroll, while they are married. So, because of that output that's transpiring over the period of time that they are married, the husband has some sort of leasehold ownership in the production of the payroll, the output of this land. What type of ownership is that? Is the husband simply a renter? If he's simply a renter, the woman remains totally in control of this item, and she could, if she knocks out the shein or the ayin of the evid, the evid will go free because she's the true owner and the husband's simply a renter. On the other hand, maybe when he owns the production rights and when he has this leasehold on the property, use the property while it's still in the possession or while they're still married, then that is enough of a ownership that it makes him almost the actual owner of the item. If he's almost the actual owner of the item, then we have joint owners here. We have the woman and the man, and neither has sufficient ownership to free the slave, right? And neither has sufficient ownership by themselves to free the slave. And therefore, if the woman knocks out the shein and the ayin, or the man knocks out the shein and the ayin, neither one by themselves can then have the slave go free because they don't have full ownership over this slave. So Ubplukta Dahani Tanayim, it's similar to a Nachum Nachum Machnokas Tanayim that we've seen. The Tanya, we have a Braisa Mukh Avdola Acher. Upasak Imo Menashi Shem Shenu Shloshim Yom. Person sells his slave, his Evid Knani, to another individual, but he almost does a sale lease back. He sells the slave to him, but he leases him back for the first 30 days. He says, yes, it's yours. It's sold from today. You own the slave now. But for the first 30 days, I want to retain the production and the output of this slave. I want to be able to use the slave for the next 30 days. So now, what is the standing or what is the position of the slave when it comes to those first 30 days? We have a similar concept, and the Gemara is going to come to this. And again, when we talked about Kodesh or Hekdesh before, there are two aspects of Hekdesh. We said before that a person can't be Makdesh, someone's item that's stolen. The owner can't sell or can't be Makdesh the item, and neither can the Ganav or the Gazlan be Makdesh the item. Why not? Because the owner has ownership over the item, but he lacks control. On the other hand, the Ganav or the Gazlan has control over the item, but they lack ownership. See, each one of them is missing one aspect here. One has control, one has ownership. Which one is that dictates? So, Behekdesh, we say you need both. If you don't have both, then you can't be Makdish the animal. So, over here also, what's the story with this Evid Kanani? When you have an Evid Kanani who's owned by one, the person he sold it to, on the other hand, right, the control, the usage is with the first, the seller, because he has him for 30 days, who now is in that 30-day period the owner. So, Rebbeinu Amar Rishon Yeshno Bedin Yom Oyomayim, that when it comes to the first owner, he's considered the full owner of the Evid Kanani. Why is that? So there's a pasuk or a special dispensation by a Evid Kanani that if a person, a person who hits his Evid Kanani or Shivcha Kananit, Bashevit with a step, umate. If he dies, then he's punishable by death, right? This person killed another individual, he's chayv mita. But there's an exemption which does not apply to the killing of a regular Israel. That is, ach im yomo yomayim yamod lo yukam ki kaspohu. If he survives and he lasts more than a day or two from the time of the blow, then he's not classified as having died from the blow because he owns him. And because of that, the master is not on the hook. He's not chayv mita because of the killing of this Evid Kanani. So now who has the status as owner of the Evid Kanani? That's what the Brisa is discussing right now. Rabbi Meir says, Rishon Yeshno Bedin Yom Yomayim. The first one, meaning the seller of the Evid, has a din of Yom Yomayim. He's the owner. He's classified. Since he has control, he's classified as the owner of the slave. Since he's the owner of a slave, therefore, if he hits him hard enough where he a hard enough blow that he could pass away, if he lasts Yom or Yomayim, then he's patur from Mita because he's classified as an owner. This exemption for hitting a Kanav Iknani is only applicable to an owner. It's not applicable to a third party. Mipnei Shu Tachtav, because he is under his control. And Kasav, Rebbe Meir Masold, Kinyan Peirot, Kinyan Aguftami. Control, owning the output or the leasehold on the property, is the equivalent of being the real owner. Real owner mean that for that period of time you are classified as the owner of that object, and because of that you get to be the adon of this Evid Kanani and get this dispensation of Yom Yomayim. No, the second party that he sold it to, the second individual has a din of yomi mine penishu kaspo, because he's the owner. It's not about control. It's about ownership. And the ownership is the landlord or the owner of the slave. That's the second one, the one you sold it to. So he's a din of yomi mine. But the first one, who's just borrowing the slave or using the slave for the first 30 days as part of their agreement, he only has a kinyan peirot. And kinyan peirot is not enough to establish you control. It's not enough to establish you as the owner. And kasavar, kinyan peirot, lav kinyan of davi, that just control is exactly that, control, but you don't own it. The owner is the underlying owner of the principle of the Evid, and that's the Shani, the second individual, the one you sold it to, and he gets the dispensation of Yom Yomayim. Rabbi Yossi Omer Shnehem Yeshnam Bedin Yom Yomayim. Both of them have that classification. Both the Rishon and the Shani have the classification as an Adon, whether it's control or ownership. Either one is sufficient to make you into the Adon, and therefore you have the dispensation of Yom Yomayim, meaning that if the Evid lasts or his death is postponed by a day or two, he lingers in that state, then you will be patur. Ze mipnei shu tachtav, veze mipnei shu kaspo. One of them, the first guy, because he's under his control, and the second guy, because he is the owner. Misvekale kinya perot, iki kinya gufdami ilaf. The reason Rabbi Yossi, iki kinya gufdami, that's why Rabbi Yossi says this, because he has a safek. He doesn't know if control is considered principal ownership or not. Is that what determines? Is control determined? Is ownership determined by control? Or is ownership determined by the underlying principle? Who owns the underlying principle? So he doesn't know. So since we have a safek nefashot hakel, since it's a safek and a din nefashot, we're not going to put anybody to death. We're not going to be don them letzad chiyuv if we don't know which way it is. So therefore, both of them get the kula, both the first and the second individuals here, the seller and the buyer, both get that dispensation of Yom and Yomayim. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Shnehem Einan Bedin Yom Yomayim. Neither of them has the rights. So this is similar to what we saw by Hekdesh. Neither of them has the rights or gets the power of Yom Yomayim, because neither of them are classified as the Adon. Why is that? Zelefi Sheinu Tachtav. This one, meaning the true owner of the item, the one that you sold it to, the buyer of the Evid Kanani, because he doesn't have control. Vizeh, and the one who sold it to him and is using the Evid for the first 30 days, that's the financial kaspo. He might have control, but he doesn't have ownership. So the lack of control or ownership, either one is sufficient to make you not into the Adon of this Evid. So Amar Rava, my time of the Rabbi Eliezer. What's the reasoning behind the position of Rabbi Eliezer? Amar Kra, the pasuk says, ki kaspo hu. It says, the reason that you're patur of yours, ki kaspo hu. Kaspo ham yuchad lo. What does kaspo yuchad lo means? That ownership that you is only yours. What does it mean, ownership only yours? That means ownership plus control. The only way to be classified as the Adon of an Evid Kanani is to have both ownership and control. That together makes you the owner, and you have the din of Yom Yomayim. If you're lacking either one, just like you can't be Makdish something if you're lacking either control or ownership, so too over here. An Evid Kanani is not you have to classify it as the Adon, Minatora, for this din of Yom Yomayim, unless you have both control and ownership. Kiman Azlaha Damar Ameymar. Who does this statement of Ameymar, this... Who does this go like, or who? Which position is he following? Ish v'isha shemachru b'nisvei meluk. A man or a woman goes ahead and sells the nisvei meluk. Lo asu v'lo klum. It's as if they did nothing. It's irrelevant. What they did is irrelevant. So what is the case? Nisvei meluk, again, are a case where the woman brings into her dowry, brings in items that remain, the principal remains hers, and the husband's entitled to usage of that property while they are married. And then the nisvei meluk revert back to the woman when they are divorced and when she collects on her ketubah. So here, the woman has the ownership, and the husband has control. The woman owns the underlying principle, but the output or the usage of the land is the husband's. And so he has control, she has ownership. So lo asav lo klum. So if either one of them sells it, they cannot sell it. Why can't they sell it? Because each one of them lacks total ownership. Total ownership means both monetary ownership and control. And each one of them lacks one of those two sides. That is, come on, Rabbi Eliezer. It's exactly like Rabbi Eliezer, who says that in order to be considered the owner of an item, you have to have both control and monetary ownership. And unless you have both, you're not going to be able to sell this item. So man, Tanur Lahad, the Tanur Rabbanon, who's the author, or who's the one we can explain this position of Mishachetzu Evid Chetzu Ben Chorin, someone, an Evid Kanani, who's half an Evid Kanani, and half a free man, V'chein Evid Shal Shnei Shutvin, or an Evid that belongs to two partners, Enyu Simber Oshia Varim. Shein Chozrin. We have a principle by an Evid Kanani, which we spoke about before, by Shein V'ayin. If a Shein V'ayin is knocked out of an Evid Kanani, that, as a Kanas, the Evid Kanani goes free, based on the knocking out of the Shein of the Ayin by the owner. So now, what happens in the case? You have Shnei Shutfin, or Chetzio Evid Kanani and Chetzio Ben Chorin. Neither of them, in it's the case, if he knocks out a Shein or Ayin, or the Shein of the Ayin gets knocked out by the owner, does not go free. Similarly, Rav Mordechai the Rav Ashi, Hachri Amri Mishmei the Rava. This is what they say in the name of Rava, Rabbi Eliezer. This is the position of Rabbi Eliezer. Milo Amar Rabbi Eliezer Kaspo Miuchado. We're talking about the Eved Kanani. That's Kaspo Miuchado. That means that ownership is determined both by control plus monetary ownership. You need both. Hachanami Avdo Miuchado. So too over here, when we're talking about this Eved Kanani, when we're talking about Avdo that goes free from Shane and Ayin, but the pasuk it uses the term Avdo. Avdo, when is someone classified? What makes it or makes an individual to be classified as Avdo? That's only if you have both items. What does that mean? You both have the control and the monetary ownership, because the pasuk says Chiyake ish ein Avdo et ein amato v'shichata. So Avdo, when is someone classified as your Eved Avdo? That's only when you have control and monetary ownership over here. Right now, the Rashi asks a very, very important question over here. Well, if that's the case, then how can any partners, if you have partners in Eved Kanani, and Eved Kanani can never be freed, it can never be sold, can't sell half of him, you can't do anything because you have joint partners over here. It sounds from the Gemara that as soon as you have Shutfut, as soon as you have Shutfin, two partners involved, as soon as there are two partners involved, everything is off. I mean, there's no din of Yom Yomayim, there's no din of the Eved goes free of Shane and Ayin. So if the Eved Kanani is owned by partners, and they, one of the partners knocks out the Shane and the Ayin, the Eved Kanani doesn't go free? Or if you have two partners that own him, and one of them hits him hard enough that he's going to pass away, if he lasts for Yom Yomayim, he doesn't get that tour because he's not classified as an owner. Is that really true? So Rashi says, no, you have to differentiate in what type of partnership we're talking about over here. Lo Damu, it's the last Rashi, one second last Rashi before the Mishnah. It says, Velo Damu the Shutfim Da'alma. This case over here is not similar, like the husband and wife, is not similar to regular partnership. Why is that? Da'atam yesh lezeh chilek b'kulo litel chetzi, v'chein lezeh. Then in the case of true partnership, each one of them owns 50% of the whole. They own whatever is there, they own 50% of every piece of it, whether it's a Kenyan Perot, Kenyan of Kesef, meaning that the principal ownership or the output ownership, everything that's there, each partner owns 100% of that piece, the 50% that they own. But in our case, that's not true. In our case, each individual shutaf doesn't own 50% of the whole, but owns 100% of 50%. They own 100% of, one of them owns all the Kenyan Perot, and one of them owns all the Kenyan Aguf. So in that case, that's where we run into a problem. That's where we run into a problem of Shutfin, and those Shutfin are not going to have a din of Eved Kanani, the Gabe, Shane Ba'ayin, are not going to have a din of Eved Kanani, the Gabe Yom B'Yomayim, because their ownership or their joint ownership almost is, precludes the other ownership, precludes the other individual for taking control, or the other ownership, other individual in taking goof, getting a goof on it. So because they're almost, their ownership is mutually exclusive, because one has output and one has Kenyan a goof, therefore they can never be considered true owners. On the other hand, when you have partners which are, everybody has, 100% of this Eved is owned, meaning for both the Kenyan Aguf, Kenyan Aperot, and then we divide that in half. So each one of us has a Kenyan Aperot and a Kenyan Aguf. And the other one has a Kenyan Aguf and a Kenyan Aperot. So inside of my 50%, I'm a complete owner of this Eved. So therefore, I will have a Din of an Adon, and I will have a Din of an Adon with a Gabe Shin Vayin, I'll have a Din of an Adon, a Gabe Yom V'Yomayim. So this Rashi over here is a little reminiscent of a Ran that we saw in the Darim. Over there, the Ran discusses the issue of one person takes is a joint owner in a chatzer, and one of the individual takes a neder to restrict the other owner in Hana. And over there, the Gemara says that you're allowed to, the joint owner, the second party, is allowed to come in and use his part of the chatzer. And we don't say that the neder restricts him from coming in. And all the Rishonim have to deal with the fact is, wait a minute, when they're joint owners of the Chatzer, that's a Din in Breira. And we have a principle in Breira, which is that Breira only applies to Dinei Drabanan, but when it comes to Dinei Doraisa, so when it comes to Torah principles, we don't apply Breira, and that there is a Din Doraisa. And how are we applying Breira over here? So the Ran draws a distinction in partnerships. There's a different thing. Generally, in Shutfut, when we talk about Shutfut, like Rashi describes over here, each person owns 50%, right, of the whole here. There's an item, and we basically cut the item in half, and each half has equal parts of everything that's there. So if you say that, then you're right. You're going to run into a problem, because then you need Breira over here to determine which part of the Chatzer that you own. If you need Breira to know which part of the Chatzer you own, we don't apply Breira when it's a Din D'Oraisa. So why should you be able to enter this Chatzer when someone takes a neder to restrict you and they are not? Whereas, and this is what the Ran's Chiddush is over there, that no, that Shutfut by a Chatzer is different. Really, each one of us owns 100% of the chatzer. Each one of us, when we're in there using the chatzer, our usage of the chatzer, we own 100% of the chatzer at that time. The only thing question is, at which time is it my chatzer and which time is it your chatzer? It's not that we're doing breira, that when I go in there and I use this piece, then we determine, oh, that was my piece, and the other piece is yours, and that's why we're using breira to determine that this is really yours, and that's why you're not violating the neder. No. The reason you're not violating the neder is because when you use the chatzer is entirely yours. Right, because we have joint ownership, but not joint ownership in that we own 50% each of the whole, but rather we all both own 100% of this chatzer. It's just we have to determine when we own 100% of it. So when I'm in there, that whole chatzer is mine. We're not using braver to determine that. We're just saying that that's our division of how we bought it. We bought it so that when I'm using it, I own 100% of it. And when you bought it, you own 100% of it. So that's why it's different. Similar distinction that Rashi draws over here between owning 50% of the whole versus owning 100% of a certain portion of it. And that is reminiscent of this run that people remember. It's a very, very important run that tries to deal with this issue of the stira between a neder, an isur hanav from a neder, and the problem of breira. Okay, now we'll continue with the next mishnah. The mishnah says, "Tokel chaveiro, noten lo sela." Person who makes noise next to the person's ear. Rashi brings two interpretations. One is that he smacked him on the ear, or the other one is that he made a very loud noise, either blew shofar or clapped his hands outside of the ear, and because of that, the person was embarrassed. So he tells him, gives him a sela for the boshet, the embarrassment he caused him for doing such a degrading act to this individual. Rashi over here talks about him actually hitting the ear. It sounds later on from the Gemara that he doesn't make physical contact, so it sounds more like the other pshat, that there's actually a noise outside the ear. Yehuda Omer Mishum Rabbi Yosef Galili Maneh, that he gets 100 zuz for that boshet. Sitro, if he slaps him across the face, Noten Lo Matayim Zuz, for the embarrassment he pays him 200 zuz. Lachar Yodo, if he slaps him with the back of his hand, which is considered a much greater slight, Noten Lo Arba Meot Zuz, then he pays him 400 zuz. Tzirim Be'ez No, if he does something to his ear, Rashi over here quotes that he pulls on his ear, that he yanks on his ear, which is an embarrassing thing. Though the Gemara in Brachot in Bechorot, and the Mishnah and Bechorot talks about Tzirim Be'ez No, that he actually makes a mum. He makes some sort of cut or does some sort of damage to the ear of an animal that makes it a mum. Right? So it's no longer a kasher Bechor. So that could be the other possibility. Here's Bogeim Be'ez No. Or Talash Pesaro, he grabbed him and pulled out his hair. Rakak Ve'Giya Bo, he spit, and the spit actually landed on him. His spit landed on the individual. Evir Tali told him, he ripped off his clothes. Para Rosh Yishayin covered a woman's hair. Bashuk, in the public place, Noten Arba Meid Zuz. He pays 400 Zuz. 400 Zuz seems to be a large number. That's like the biggest embarrassment that you can do to somebody. So 400 Zuz is classified as the ultimate boshet payment, and we'll see that again reinforced in the Gemara based on the next part of the Mishnah. But in general, when the Torah and the Gemara uses terms like 300, 400, they're usually trying to use numbers that are very big. Not always derech guzma, but usually something to say this is just extreme or the highest form, or this is a large amount. So generally when you say 400, 400 means that this is going to be a large payment. I'm not saying it's not exact over here. It could be 400 zuz, but again, it's an indication of this. This is the ultimate form of embarrassment. This is a true form of embarrassment. So now, Zeklau, what's the principle here? What's the principle here? Kol lifi kavodo. Everything's based on the kavod of the individual. Both the individual is doing the damage and the individual is being damaged. I mean, it's subjective. Bullshit is a very subjective item. I'm Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva comes along, and who's Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva is the Gabbai Tzedaka, the champion of the Aniim. And what does Rabbi Akiva say? Afilu Aniim Shisrael. Even the poorest person in Israel. Ro'im Otan Kiloim B'nei Chorin Sher Du B'nei Chseim. We look at them as, no, they're regular people, wealthy, normal people that just, falling on hard times. Shem B'nei Avram Yitzchak V'Yaakov. We all come from a similar forefathers. We're all the same. And therefore, they will be equal or plateau. We don't judge a person on their current status, but there is a standard for everyone. There's a common status between all peoples, and we're not going to differentiate between a near and a shirin or subjective matter. The Gemara is going to ask, well, is Rabbi Akiva right when he says that? Is that the Chumra or the Kula? Because we said before, right, that's a Kol Lifnei Kvodo. Everything is based on the kavod of the item. Does that mean what the numbers that were enumerated in the Mishnah are a cap? That's the top. That's the richest man, the highest status individual. That's what you pay out. And Zelifnei, when we say Zelifnei Kvodo, means that we would diminish from those amounts based on anybody who had a lower status than the highest person in society. And those are the maximum amounts of punishment. And Zelifnei Kvodo reduces that amount. And Rabbi Kiva comes along to say, no, that everybody should be classified in the highest strata. Or the other possibility is that these are minimum amounts that the Tanakhama is given. These are the minimums for anybody. But the Kol D'Fik Vodo means that above and beyond that amount, we would pay more because these are the minimums. This is for the poorest person in Israel. But someone has a higher status, you'd pay even more money. And Rabbi Akiva comes along and says, no, that can't be the case. It has to be equal. So everybody's going to get paid either more money or everybody's going to have to get the minimum. We're all going to be at the same standards. That's what Gemara has discussed, whether the Tanakhama is the Kul or the Chumra, and that will determine whether Rabbi Akiva, again, is a... What is Rabbi Akiva addressing in the statement of the Tanakhama? Umayis is a very interesting case here. Bechot Shapara Rosh HaYishabashuk. An individual came along, pulled off the head covering of a woman in the shuk. Bat lifnei Rabbi Akiva. She came before Rabbi Akiva. V'chayvo liten la'arba mil zuz. And Rabbi Akiva required this individual to pay her 400 zuz. That's what we see on our Mishnah. 400 zuz, pull off the hair covering. That's the bullshit that you have to compensate for. Amalo Rabbi ten lizman. Give me some time to pay back or to rectify this situation. But not unless mine, Rabbi Akiva acquiesced. The Gemara will discuss why is Rabbi Akiva allowed to give him acquiescence to take more time. Generally with chavalot or dinim about reparations and compensation, we say you got to pay right away. So why did he give him this leeway? So the Gemara will discuss that. Shamra omredet al petech chatzera. He waited, he watched till she was standing right at the doorway to her chatzer. V'shavaret akad b'fanel. He took a pitcher that had ubo kisar shemen, that had a oil with an isar in it, and he broke it right on the floor in front of her, and the shemen spilling out. Giltat rusha. She uncovered her hair. V'itam mitapechet. She was grabbing the oil, manechet yadal rusha, and smearing it on her head, so whatever the benefits or the beauty that was associated with putting the oil in the hair. She saw this oil in front of her, and since she was willing to uncover her hair, even though she was around the petach chatzera, right there, out by the public domain, and she uncovered her hair by herself. So he put edim to show that she uncovered her hair by herself, and she wasn't embarrassed about that, and he comes before Rabbi Akiva. To this woman, I'm paying 400 zuz. She's willing to pull her hair covering off for a little piece of oil on the floor, because I pulled off her hair covering, I'm going to pay 400 zuz here. It doesn't make sense. It's not commensurate with the embarrassment that I caused here. Your statement or your argument holds no ground. Why is that? Because a person who injures himself, even though he's not permitted to injure himself, patur. Nevertheless, if he does injure himself, he is patur. There is no monetary compensation to make. He might have violated nisur. The Gemara will have to discuss what that nisur is. But even if he violates an nisur, he's still patur. There's no monetary compensation he has to make because he's hurting himself. Nevertheless, if acherim shechavlu bo chayavim, if a third party came and injured him, he'd still be chayav. So even though an individual comes along and is in violation of nisur, if he hurts himself, but if he does it, he's not chayav any money. He's patur. And then someone else comes and does the exact same thing to him. We're not going to say they're patur just because the individual himself did it to himself. No, he's patur, but a third party is going to be chayav. And the same thing, person who pulls out the saplings that he planted, even though he's not permitted to do this, Rashi says because of bal tashchit, right? It's a total waste that you're going and uprooting, growing plants, things that are productive, right? That are either giving off fruits or doing something that's productive, and you go out and destroy them for no reason. So even though you're not permitted to do bal tashchit, patur. Nevertheless, there's no monetary compensation here because they are your plants. Nevertheless, acherim, if someone, a third party came along and pulled out the saplings, they'll be chayavim. Even though you pulled them out, or you pulled out some, and then he comes along and pulls out others, we're not going to make you patur. That's the prerogative of the individual. Even though it's a suri, he's patur from monetary compensation, yet a third party is going to be chayav, and so too over here. Just because this woman is willing, or able and willing to embarrass herself doesn't mean that you have the right to embarrass her. So she has, it's her prerogative. Maybe it was wrong what she did to uncover her hair. Nevertheless, that's her prerogative to be mevayesh et tzatzma, that she wants to embarrass herself. That's her prerogative, and we can't force her to pay herself for that busha. Nevertheless, you as a third party are going to embarrass her. You're going to be chayav, and you're going to have to pay her. Now, according to Rabbi Akiva, that means that you're going to pay her at the standard rate. There is no difference between Ashir and Andi. Everybody's on the same level. There is no difference or differentiation for status. So you're going to have to pay the full 400 zuz according to Rabbi Akiva. Whereas the Tanakhama would say, in this instance, this guy's right. The fact that this woman uncovered her hair and is willing to be vayesh herself just to take a little oil off the floor tells me that 400 zuz isn't the right payment. Right? Maybe she should be getting less than that, and that she's not entitled to 400 zuz. Again, by the way, this is the Gemara's proof later on, that obviously the Tanakhama means that this is a cap, 400 zuz is a cap, and Rabbi Akiva is coming to, and when he says the Kol Fik Vodo is coming to be made kill on that number if it's somebody poor, and Rabbi Akiva says no, everybody's at that same standard, because you see Rabbi Akiva paskin for this woman that she gets 400 zuz. So Afil Ani, which would have been less, gets 400 zuz over here. So now the Gemara says, Yibailuhu manetsu ritnan o mane medina. When we're talking about the monetary compensation over here, we said a seller, tokea lechavero, a person who blows a sound or scares, frightens his friend by doing something right by his ear, he has to pay a seller. Now, a seller can come in two forms. It can come in seletsuri, which is basically the equivalent of the gold standard, right? That's the ultimate monetary standard, and that's what we're talking about over here. Or we're talking about mane medina, the current coinage that is available today. So a sella in mane tsuri is equal to 4 zuz. That is equal to 4 zuz. On the other hand, sella medina is worth 1/8 of the sella tsuri, meaning that the gold standard of sella tsuri, the coinage of today, or the common coinage that was used at their time, was worth 1/8 the value of the tsurian coinage. So if that's the case, you don't have to pay half a zuz. So it makes a difference. When he's tokeh lechavero, does he have to pay 4 zuz, which is what the seller means, or does he pay half a zuz, which is 1/8 of the amount, right, of what a seller tzuri would be, which would be a seller medina. So tashma, da'u gavre takalei lechavre, a person did this, whatever, made this noise, or this frightened, or blew a shofar by his friend's ear, atu lekamei d'Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya, I came before Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya, amar lei, ha'ana, ha'Rabbi Yossi Aglili. I'm here, and Rabbi Yosef Galili is here. Havle manetzuri, pay him in the Tsurian coinage. Shvamina manetzuri tnan. Shvamina. See, we can prove from here that it's clear that we're talking about manetzuri, and she would. Oh, when you're talking about a seller, we're talking about 4 zuz over here. Now, the brisa where we just brought here is pretty cryptic, meaning that the end is clear, which is that we pay in manetzuri, which is what the question that we had. But the brisa itself is a little bit strange, which is, what's this? Ha'ana, ha'Rabbi Yossi Aglili. So that's my ask. My ha'ana, ha'Rabbi Yossi Aglili. What's the relevance of me, Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya, saying, and Rabbi Yossi Aglili? See, ilay ma'achi kamar leiv. This is what you think he said. Ha'ana de chasitech. I saw you, or chasitcha. I saw you doing this, hatokele chavero, v'harab yosi gluli damar manetzuri. And Rabbi Yossi Galili is the position that when you do boshet, and when you have to pay based on what the Mishnah says sell, you have to pay him manetzuri. So based on that, zivale manetzuri. Then go pay him, right, the amount of the tsurian coinage. Meaning that either you have to pay a seller or a manet, it should all be determined by the coinage of the tsuri coinage, not by the common or the medina coinage of today. That conclusion we have from Rabbi Yossi Galili. And Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya says that I saw it. So the fact that I saw you do it, plus we have the position Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya says has to be monetary. Sivale monetary. Go and pay him the amount that you owe for the bullshit in the Tsurian coins. Lamemra. Well, what we can conclude from this is that Eid Nasid Dayan, that a witness can become a judge. Why? Because Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya is saying over here, listen, I saw what happened. And then Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya is also the judge in the case. So he's the judge in the case. And he was the witness to the event that took place. And he's adjudicating this case, even though he's both the witness and the judge. So how can that be, Vatanyo? Don't we have a brisa? Sanhedrin Shiru Echad Sharagat Nefes. Sanhedrin sees a murderer take place in front of them. Miksata Nasu Edim. Part of the Bezdin becomes Edim. Umiksata Nasu Dayanim. And part of them should sit as the Dayanim. Divri Rabbi Tarfon. So to be proper witnesses, they can't be Dayanim. So you have to have those that were witnesses, you want to be witnesses, you bring them in as witnesses, but they won't sit as Dayanim. On the other hand, the Dayanim, who decide they don't want to be witnesses, they'll sit in the court, and they will be Dayanim. So Rabbi Akiva Omer, Kulam Edim Heim. They're all Edim, Ein Eid Nasid Dayan. So that, and everybody agrees that an aid can never become a dayan. All these people are edim, and there's nothing to talk about. They can't become dayanim. So now, ad kan lo kamar Rabbi Tarfon no de miksata nasu edim, miksata nasu dayanim. Rabbi Tarfon only says that, look, half the Sanhedrin will be edim, half the Sanhedrin will be dayanim. About aid nasu dayan lo kamar, he doesn't allow you to say, let them all be edim and sit the dayanim down. He still differentiates between edim and dayanim. He keeps them in separate categories. He really requires part of the Beis Din to be dayanim and part of the Beis Din to be edim. He never says that those that are edim can become dayanim. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva says, ain't it nasa dayan whatsoever. So therefore, these dayanim, none of them can sit as dayanim. They are edim. So now, Gemara concludes, Kitanya, this Bryce's reading could go into Reu Balayla when they saw it at night. Because they can't do the din on the spot. If they can't do the spin din on the spot, then when they come the next day, they're not doing a mitor edim because they saw it and they can paskin based on it. Now they have to come and testify like any other witness would in a case. So when do we say ein eid nasa dayan, that a witness cannot become a judge? That's in an instance where you require edut to have the case move forward. When's that? That's when they, for instance, the Beis Din saw this happen at night. So the Beis Din themselves cannot adjudicate the case on the spot because we don't do din at night. If they don't adjudicate the case on the spot, then the next day when they go to adjudicate the case, they're not doing it anymore based on the ri'yah, what they saw right there, but rather now they have to rely on testimony, whether it's their testimony or other edim's testimony, they're still relying on testimony. Once they rely on testimony, those edim, those that saw it, cannot become dayanim. On the other hand, in a case where it was during the day, right, and there the dayanim witness it and they paskin, they're going to sit and paskin the case right on the spot, they're doing it because they were ro'eh, they saw it right now, and there's no requirement for edut. Since there's no requirement of edut, then an ed, not a dayan. An ed become a dayan in that instance. So now you have a way to explain the Brisa from Sanhedrin. The Brisa from Sanhedrin will explain why can't the edim nasa dayanim, whether it's according to Rabbi Tarfon or according to Rabbi Akiva. That's because we're talking about at night. At night, now the next day when you go to testify, when you bring in the information forward, you're acting as edim. When you act as edim, you can't become dayanim. On the other hand, right, when we're talking about this case of Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah, when he says, I saw this happen, and he's becoming the Dayan, it's because it's during the daytime. During the daytime, he can pass from the Lacha right on the spot based on what he saw. He doesn't require any witnesses to tell him what he saw, because he's sitting here at the din right away, right after he saw the event transpire in front of him. Tosas just points out over here, he says that there's the machlokes between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim, or how to Ein Eid Nasa Dayan, how does that work? So he says that when it comes to a case, Eid Haro'eh, right, that any Eid that sees Eidut and wants to come and testify about the Eidut, then Ein Me'id, he can't do this because Ein Me'id Nasa Dayan, then he can't become a Dayan. So if he acts in the position or as a function of an aid, once he acts as an aid and functions as an aid, then he cannot become a dayan. So that's what Rabbi Tarfon says. Rabbi Tarfon says, look, some of the Sanhedrin will be edim, some of them will be dayanim. So those that choose to be edim cannot be dayanim, and those that choose to be dayanim are not going to be edim. You just have to separate between the two items. As long as you want to testify, if you're going to be an aid, you're not going to be a dayan. Right? But just because you witnessed the event, that does not preclude you from becoming a Dayan. The other Dayanim there, the other part of the Sanhedrin saw the event, but they can still be Dayanim because, right, Ein Eid Nasa Dayan is only when you act as an aid, not because you saw it and you were an aid. It's only when you come now to function as an aid do we not allow you to become a Dayan. And the Kiva comes and argues and says, no, that's not the case. The case is that as soon as you see it, when you are a witness, you're no longer allowed to be a Dayan. That's why Rabbi Akiva says over here, the whole Sanhedrin becomes Edim. The whole Sanhedrin becomes Edim because they all witnessed the event. Once they witness the event, they're precluded from becoming Dayanim. Now, this also qualifies and says that Rabbi Akiva's position is only by Dine Nefashot. It's only by Dine Fashot, as he say, if you witness events, you cannot become a Dayan. But by Dine Mamonos and Dine Drabonon, then an Eid Nasa Dayan, according to Rabbi Kiva, even if you witness the event, that does not preclude you from becoming a Dayan. So again, this is Tosu's explanation or understanding of the difference between Rabbi Tarfon's position and that position of Rabbi Kiva of Ein Eid Nasa Dayan. One of them talks about functioning as an aid. When you function as an aid, you can't become a Dayan. And Rabbi Kiva believes if you saw something, you witnessed something, not that you functionary, but because you have a good, because you actually witnesses it, that precludes you from becoming a Dayan in this case. So now the Gemara continues. Vid by Eitema, we have another solution to this, or how to explain this. Ano v'Rabbi Yosi Aglili. How do we explain that? Haki kamarle ha ana the sphere lake Rabbi Yosi Aglili. I hold Rabbi Yosi Aglili saying I hold the Rabbi Yosi Aglili. Damar menetzuri. Right, and I have these witnesses who are testifying against you that you did this. Now pay him manitzuri. So only thing that Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah in this case was acting on was a dayan. He had separate edim for the case, and all he was pointing out with regards to Rabbi Yosi Aglili is that I hold like Rabbi Yosi Aglili says that when you pay with manitzuri. Is it really true that Rabbi Akiva believes that an aid cannot become a dayan? Right, Rabbi Akiva, we just said before when he argues in Rabbi Tarfon that an aid can't become a dayan. Vahatanya, we have a brisa of a hiki vika ishet reyo be'evin obe'egrof. Person hits his friend be'evin obe'egrof. So that's a pasuk that's found in Parshat Mishpatim. It says, people are fighting. One individual hits his friend, Evan Obergrove, with a rock or with a fist. When a fall ishkav, he doesn't die, and then he's injured. If he's able to survive and doesn't pass away, then you're not chayav mita. You still have to pay for the disability, unemployment, and the medical bills. But But you're not chayav misa. On the other hand, obviously, if you're chayav misa, then you're not going to pay for the monetary issues because of accumulated rabim mine. But more importantly, the person's not around; they passed away. So now it says, "Hika yishet reo beim no grof shemaytei money omer my grof miyuchad." What's unique about a fist? Shemasur leida uleidim, that it's both visible and able to be assessed by the Eida, which is the Dayanim, and the Eidim, and the witnesses. Meaning that the vehicle or the weapon that's being used here to injure or kill is available or available to be assessed by both Beis Din and by the Eidim. Af kol shemasur leida uleidim. That means that any time we talk about a weapon or damage done by an object, we have to be able to see and assess whether this object has the ability to cause such damage. Prat, so what's excluded from that? L'shiyatz tamitachar yedim. If the yedim lose the either the murder or the damaging weapon, then we can't bring them to din, because Rabbi Shimon HaTimani believes that it has to be, the weapon has to be assessed both by the Edim, so the Edim understand what type of blow was given here and whether it was sufficient enough of a blow to kill him or to injure him. And the Beis Din needs to see it. So if the Edim lose the weapon, then the Beis Din can no longer assess it. If they no longer can assess it, then it will not be, or he will not be chayav in this case. Rabbi Akiva says, wait a minute. So wait a minute. Did this actual action happen in front of the Beis Din? Did he actually hit the other individual? Did the weapon or the murder or the damage, was that carried out right in front of Beis Din? Shodin, kama iko? They don't know how hard he hit him. Vama iko? Or where he hit him? Alal shoko, on his thigh, or tzipar nafsho, on the soft, actually says the soft part of the chest by the heart, an area which is delicate, right? How do you know where he hit him? I mean, that's true. Your fist can show up in Beis Din, and Beis Din can look at the size of the fist and say, okay, that's a big fist or a small fist, I'm going to give a type of hit. But you still need other information, which Beis Din is lacking, is how powerful was the hit? Right? Where did the hit take place? And that they still need to rely on the Edim for. So how could you draw a parallel between the Edim and the Eda and the Dayanim? Right? Or what are you going to do in a case where a person pushes his friend off the roof of a building? Or Merosha Bira, or a tower? Umate, and he dies. Bezin Ochil Neitz Bira. When's the last time you heard that Bezin goes out to investigate how high the house is, how high the Migdal is? They don't go out. Or Bira Olecha Neitz Bezin. We don't bring the house or the tower in. We bring an Edim to testify as to what happened. Vod and Imnafla, if the building falls down, Choser Abuna, you're going to have to go back and rebuild the building, so Beis Din go out there and assess the height of the building. Ella, but you can't say that. He says that even according to you, Shimon HaTeimani, who says, oh, we have the fist in front of us, that shows us that both the Edim and the Dayanim need to assess the power of the weapon that's being used. Right? So that's what Rabbi Shimon HaTeimani says. But he says, you can't say that. That you learned that from Egrof. Egrof, Beis Din is still missing a large part of the information. If they're missing a large part of the information, they're relying on the witnesses to give them that information. If they're relying on the witnesses for that information, they can rely on the witnesses for the murder weapon as well, or the damaging weapon, because they still need to aid them all the way through to make a determination whether this was powerful enough of a blow. Ella, how are you going to, Rabbi Akiva formulates it differently. Ma egrof miuchad shumasu leidim. Just like a fist, the weapon that's used, the Edim see, of course you must rule Edim. So it's only when the Edim see the weapon and they can assess the strength, the power of the hit and the weapon, they'll be the determining factor whether he's chayav or not. Prad was exclusive. If the murder weapon disappears or the damaging weapon disappears and the Edim never can see it or never can assess it, then he's patur, because the Edim can never get to a point where they can be comfortable that the blow he gave him was a sufficient enough blow to either kill him or put him into the state of damage or a disability that he's in right now. Tani mihat, but from this you can see, Amar lo Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva says, v'chi b'fnei Beis Din iko, shodim kamo iko. Did he hit him in front of Beis Din so that Beis Din would know how much he hit him? Ha, what's implicit from that? How iko b'fnei him, edna sedayan. Had they done it right in front of Beis Din, Beis Din would have been paskin alocha right on the spot. They wouldn't need any other edim. They saw the event happen in front of them, they can paskin alocha. So you see, eid, nase dayan. Yeah, we just said the position of Rabbi Akiva is, what? Ain eid nase dayan. By the case in Sanhedrin, Rabbi Akiva says explicitly, when the Sanhedrin sees something, they can't become Edim and Dayanim, right? They can only be Edim, because now that they've been exposed to the event, they become Edim, and once they're Edim, they can't become Dayanim. So where it says the Rav, Rabbi Shimon HaTimani Kamar. He's saying this in the sheet of Rabbi Shimon HaTimani, Velelo Srila. He doesn't hold of it. He says, look, I don't hold of this whole business here about Bezin needing to assess the Nezek or the Misa, right? That I rely solely on the Edim. But according to you, Shimon HaTimani, who says that Bezin has to be involved, then listen. Is the case here where you hit him right in front of Beis Din that there's enough evidence for Beis Din to make all the assessment of the judgment? No. Beis Din's still relying on the Edim for other parts of that evidence. So I don't necessarily hold that way, but you who holds that way, you still don't have enough information. And Eid Nasid Dayan, according to your Shita. But that's not the way I hold. I hold Eid Nasid Dayan. The Tosfos asks, what's the source for Eid Nasid Dayan? So Tosfos goes through two or three answers to try to figure out where do we know the fact that Ain Eid Nasid Dayan. So he says one possibility is because it's Eidut Shein Echol Azimah. It's an Eidut that cannot be brought to Azimah because the Dayanim themselves are both the Eidim and the Dayanim. Another set of Eidim comes along and is going to be Mezim them. These Dayanim, they're not going to accept the Azimah. They're just not going to accept that type of testimony against themselves. So Joseph says that he doesn't like this reasoning. It was a problem for the Reed Orleans because then you can have any Eidut. Any Eidut, they say they're Krovim to the Dayanim, the witnesses that come along, they're not going to be able to testify. Why? Because somehow the Dayanim are going to protect them? No. You go to another Beis Din. You want to be Mezim them? Go to another Beis Din. You bring them to that Beis Din and you Mezim them over there. We don't rely on these Dayanim solely to create Hazamah. We can create Hazamah in another Beis Din. So that can't be the reason. So then he quotes the Rashbam, who says that the reason is Vamdushne Anashim. That the two people must stand there. So what does that mean? Amdushne Hashem lefnei Elohim, right? That they have to stand before Hashem, or they have to stand before the Beis Din. Shemdu Anashim lefnei Adayanim. That the witnesses have to stand before the judges. And they can't be sitting. The Eidim themselves can't be sitting there to be the Dayanim. The way the Pasuk describes it is that two people come forward to speak to the Dayanim. That implies that there are two different parties here. There's one party that's the Eidim, and one party that is the Dayanim. So if that's the case, right, you can't have the Dayan be both the Eid and the Dayan, because then there's nobody standing in front of the Dayanim to present the case or present the information to them. So that's the position of the Rashbam. The Re gives one other reason, which it says, he brings a quote, that during the day you can be manchil to your children, but you cannot be manchil to your children at night. The fact that b'yom manchilo, when it's during the daytime, if you're there and you make a statement, they can put the children and they can take their land right away based on the division. But if it's at night, we can't adjudicate the case right away, or we can't let the children go right away. Why? Because there's no din at night, there's no 1 o'clock at night, and that means that the next day it's going to be Eidut. If it's Eidut, right, then Ein Eid Nasid Dayan, and that's why you can't execute on such a statement that's made at night. It's going to be executed on during the day. So that's the proof of the re. Anyway, three reasons that Tosfos brings down for why Ein Eid Nasid Dayan. Okay, and we'll stop over here.